Okay, guys, thank you very much for coming to our conference. We're going to get back on track, and with us today, George Schindler from CGI, a company that is a stock darling for many investors in Canada. It has outperformed multiple years in a row, and the stock is closing in on 52-week high, or it's currently at a 52-week high. We're wondering when you're going to hit $100.
So am I. Can you tell me?
Soon, I guess, if you keep growing the EPS the way you have been doing. We're very fortunate to have George with us today. If you have any follow-up questions, please refer them to me or to Lauren or Mathieu. They're both here in the room, and we'll try to get answers for you. But I'll start with a general question. George's most recent acquisition, Acando. Can you tell us? Acando, can you tell us the reason, the purpose of the acquisition, how you got there, and is it a stepping stone into something bigger, maybe?
Yeah, no, it's a good question, and yet the answer is it's very similar to the last set of 10 metro market mergers that we've done here over the last 2 years, and it's a little bigger. It spans some metro markets. I think that's an opportunity we'll see more of, but it's exactly consistent with the strategy that we've had and will continue to have, which is a two-pronged approach to acquisitions. This is still in the metro market strategy, so even though it's a little bigger, a little over 400 million Canadian in revenue, a couple thousand people, it's really three metro market mergers. One in Stockholm, one in Oslo, and one in Hamburg, which is the north of Germany, and consistent with what we've been looking for. Higher end systems integration and consulting relationships. This one a little bit heavier on the consulting side, which is important. They have relationships with exactly the kind of clients that we want in each of those regions. It gives us more critical mass. And why is that the strategy on the metro market side? It's because we're moving from a current climate where more of our clients have been buying digital transformation in a very big way. That starts with relationships between business and IT, and so that's what these metro markets have been bringing us. But we're moving into a market where they got to look at two things now. They have to look at, and I'm talking about our clients now, our clients have to look at how do they continue to invest and spend in IT. They promised this to their customers. They promised this to their investors. They need to do this to compete in their markets. There's a huge opportunity, but it's also a cost. On the other side, if we're in a slowing economy, they need to be more diligent about how they spend that money and make sure that they're getting operational savings. And in order to get those operational savings, they are going to look to companies like CGI that can provide those savings through our managed services, through our IP. And so we see we're going to be in a higher demand market there. These acquisitions give us the feet on the street and the relationships to do that conversion from SINC, which you know have been going up. Been very transparent about that these last several quarters. To flip over to more of a managed services recurring revenue. And that's a good market for us.
I really like the fact that it has a good exposure to in Germany, because that's a country, it's very large in Europe, but you have not had the same kind of positioning in that country as you did, as you do in France, UK, Northern Europe.
It's one of the strongest, as we know, strongest economies in Europe. We've been growing double digits in Germany for some time organically, but to accelerate that, you're absolutely right. We don't have the critical mass, and so you see the last two we've done, CKC, and now when this one closes with Acando, And I do want to make sure it's clear. We announced the acquisition. We have to go through the regulatory process. We expect it to close sometime in Q3. So you're not going to see that in this quarter's numbers, of course.
What kind of accretion do you expect to make out of that?
Same as we always say, it'll be accretive in year one.
Accretive in year one. Usually you have double-digit type accretion.
Consistent with what we're committed to on our bottom line, yes.
Okay. Market in Europe still open for additional M&A or?
Yeah, I think we're moving.
There's still a lot of opportunities.
We still have hundreds of opportunities in each of the markets that we operate in, both in North America and in Europe. It's still a highly fragmented market.
I usually get to M&A at the end, but given the situation, I have
sure.
to start with. But if I look at the business, the bookings have been growing quite nicely, and organic growth has also starting to catch up. All the questions I get from investors is how long can this continue? How is organic growth going to continue to accelerate?
Yeah, I think, again, understanding the market that we're coming from and the market we're going to in a growing economy, where we're still in that accelerating growing economy, there's an opportunity for us to accelerate organic growth. But CGI is a little bit unique in that we're not just playing in one side of the market. We're not just playing in that systems integration and consulting market. We believe, and these acquisitions all consistent with that, that we can convert those discrete project revenue on the systems integration and consulting side into longer-term managed services agreements. And we're moving into that market. And that's, in fact, the exact discussions I'm having with many of the CXOs of our customers right now. When we do that, that actually comes at a higher booking value, longer-term revenue, lower cost of sales, higher utilization, allows us to expand margins and revenue as we add on those dimensions. Because by definition, a systems integration and consulting project, as exciting as they are typically 6 months, 9 months, 13-month in engagements, and then you have to repeat. And in a growing economy, you can repeat. We've been doing that very nicely. But there's a lot of activity that has to occur to make that happen. The nice part and the reason we have never strayed from the strategy of about 70% of our revenue would like to come from longer-term recurring revenue, it's because that's what provides us the stronger margins. Always want to have a percentage in that front-end element because that's what keeps you relevant to the market, and we've seen this in this most recent economy that we've been in. But we're going into an economy, I think it even plays stronger for CGI.
Okay. As you transition to these longer term contracts, I think the risk in mitigating the risk in getting into a bad contract will become important. You've had good success in not getting into bad contracts, but we hear about engineering companies, industrial companies getting into these long-term contracts, and then something happens and it causes significant pain to the company and to shareholders. How do you mitigate these risks?
Yeah, I think what we have learned from our 42 years of doing this, you have to look at those long-term engagements. You have to build in some of the flexibility that's necessary. So we're actually known as being a very flexible company to deal with these long-term contracts. That cuts both ways. That's good for the client because they get some of that flexibility, but it's good for us because we built in the inevitable change that has to occur. And what we don't do is commit to a large transformation as part of that long-term plan, because those long-term transformations can change, priorities change,
and budgets change.
Budgets change. And so it's the managed service around the what we know now, building in some of that flexibility for changes in the future, which gives us the proper risk profile.
And you can monitor them quite continuously.
Quite continuously, yeah. And that's nice too, because what we practice is what we practice on these long-term engagements with our clients is exactly the way we operate our company. So we are metrics-driven on everything we do. It's why we can do the mergers very clearly. It's why we can commit to the accretion in year one because of the focus and the measurement that we have. And so what we're doing for our customers and measuring that is just what we do for our own company. And so it's a very natural part of our DNA. And that's a difference, too, in the way we approach these.
I'm not hearing from you any kind of concern about the industry, which some of your competitors might be alluding to, like Accenture or Infosys. It seems like your business is still humming. It doesn't seem like it's getting affected by any economic challenges right now.
No, like I said, it's definitely, we see a pronounced change in the business buying behavior. But we play into that change. And again, what it is most of our customers say, I have to make some of these investments. I need to make some of these investments. They're more open to the kinds of discussions that I'm talking about of how do we maybe take a bigger piece of the current operational budget to help fund some of the investment budget. And that's the discussion we're having. So if we're in those discussions, yes, I feel better about the situation.
Okay. Any questions from the audience? I have many more in case. Okay. On the margin side.
He has a lot.
I have a.
Feel free.
We can go through another hour if we want. Margins, you've easily noticed the margin improvement in the last couple of quarters, and thanks to the work that has been done on the restructuring side last year. How much more margin improvement should we expect?
Yeah, it's a good question. So on the immediate impact of that restructuring, you're seeing that. We're now at full run rate. But remember, when I announced that restructuring, we did that for two distinct reasons. One was, given this shift, we had unfortunately some individuals that either weren't willing or weren't able to move to the new way of doing work and the new business models. And so we did that very respectfully and went through that restructuring in exactly as we had mentioned. And so that dropped some immediate opportunities in the margins because those were the individuals that were less utilized. Having said that, the other part of that restructuring was to give us the ability to continue to invest in both our intellectual property and in bringing some of the other resources in. Now, we've done some of that in an accelerated fashion through the mergers, but we've done some of that organically. And so there is still some opportunities, particularly in certain countries where the restructuring was really about that mix of business. So a lot of that was directed to the ends of the spectrum, the business process outsourcing and the infrastructure outsourcing. So as you bring those down, you're replacing that with some higher margin work, and particularly in certain countries like Northern Europe, in the countries in Northern Europe specifically, and the Netherlands, we're still in an upward trend, and so you're seeing some of the residual effects of that. It's not as a direct result of the restructuring, but it's an indirect result of the restructuring, and regardless, it will result in margin expansion in those areas.
You touched on IP, and I remember, I don't know how many years, there was an investor relation meeting you guys did in Toronto.
Yep.
2 years ago?
Maybe even three years ago. I think it was 3 years ago, yeah.
So you were talking about IP30. Mm-hmm. IP30 is, it seems hard to achieve, but you've been making acquisitions and that has probably delayed getting there. But is that still an objective, and what does it take to get there? How many years are we talking?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. It's a bit of a parallel to the discussion.
Maybe just to explain, IP30 is the mix of business that comes from IP that should hopefully attain 30% of
the percentage of our overall revenue that's directly related to IP. And maybe to put a further point on that, is not just our license revenue or our software as a service revenue. It's also the services associated with that. So it's a reasonable target for us to have. But I'm going to take us back to the parallel to that, which is we want to have about 70% of our revenue in the recurring space, 30% in the systems integration and consulting space. Point in time, we are about 45% of recurring revenue and 55% in the systems integration and consulting. And it's for two reasons. One, as Mayor, as you just mentioned, it's some of those acquisitions that we're bringing on, which are primarily systems integration consulting. So 0% of their revenue is in IP, and 0% of their revenue is in outsourcing. But of course, they're channels for us to sell through all those additional services. So they're actually accelerators on that. Number two, the way our clients have been buying in an up economy, in the inflection point that we're at in technology, they've been buying more systems integration and consulting. And you see that with every client, pretty much across every industry, across every geography. We're going into an economy where things are going to get tighter, and two things happen. One, as I mentioned, the outsourcing, but two, actually the value proposition for our IP goes up in this economy. Because, and I had this discussion with one of our clients actually in Sweden. As you might imagine, I was in Sweden a couple weeks ago, right before the announcement. But I took the opportunity to meet with some of our clients there, and I met with one of our business and clients and CFOs, and what they said is, you know, this IP that we were talking to them about, it's not announced yet, so I can't give you that information, but what he was explaining to me is in a growing economy, you know, he was going to get to this and maybe do it a different way. In the economy he's looking at now, he said, look, I'm not going to have the money to invest in this. It doesn't make sense for me anymore. But if I do it with you, software as a service, I don't even have to fund it the same way. It's a different, obviously, it's a different source of capital. I can pay as I go. It's a perfect model. Go. And I'm going to sign off on
you,
it.
This you bring your technology.
Yeah, to bring our technology in, because he's not going to have the money to invest.
To build it himself.
To build it himself, with or without a partner. And so now it's a better value proposition. I think we'll see more and more of that in this economy. So now you've got more channels to sell through that IP and a market that's conducive to buying that. I think you'll see an acceleration over time of the IP. So long way of saying, yes, I do think the IP 30 is still
it's still achievable.
Target. Just like the 70% is achievable, even though point in time, you could argue, George, it's going the opposite direction. Isn't that off strategy? No, it's just part of the longer term strategy.
And the question that I get with after that is what the margin would look like if we attain that objective. Right now, your EBIT margins are mid-teens. Where would they be if we get to IP30?
I'm looking at our CFO. I'm thinking of the advice I get. I would say higher. I mean, the intellectual
answer.
Property is at a higher margin profile, for sure.
Definitely.
It's our highest. So if you think of the different pieces of our portfolio, intellectual property is the highest growth margin and the highest net margin. Our systems integration and consulting is our higher gross margin, but actually a slightly lower net margin because lower utilization, higher cost of sales. Our outsourcing is a slightly lower gross margin, which sometimes people confuse and say, well, is that really what you want? Yes, we want that, because it also comes at a higher, slightly higher net margin, because it's higher utilization, lower cost of sales, because it's a longer term deal and it's recurring, so we can know who's going to be on the project. So you know, you got somebody deployed for the next 5 years versus somebody deployed for the next 9 months. By definition, it's going to be
more efficient.
Different. So that's why we like that 70-30. It gives you more in the higher net margin, but you stay relevant. And then on the IP, you would say, George, why not IP70 then? The problem with IP70 is then you're a software firm. And then that value proposition changes. And now you're looking at what's the next best product and solution, your whole model changes.
R&D.
We're in the IT services. We're not a software company.
Okay.
And so it's a very important distinction. Again, short answer is higher.
You have quite a bit of exposure to the UK, and we all hear the news every day about Brexit and how difficult it is over there. Can you talk about what you're seeing from client demand and government as well?
Yeah, so I was just in the UK before I was in Stockholm, and met with a couple of the MPs and several of our clients, and it's pretty consistent with what I've been saying. Nobody has a crystal ball. I think there's even some, watching some of the question and answers this morning, there's a lot going on there. But there's three basic scenarios that can happen, and we have a plan for each of those scenarios, whether it's a no-deal Brexit, a hard or a softer deal Brexit, or a delay. And that's pretty much the three scenarios we're looking at now. Delay is pretty much business as usual, and we're more than holding our own now. Our strategy on the current situation is to get very close with our customers, because when something happens, and something will happen, that only puts us in a better position. If it's a no deal Brexit, our government, and we're about 50-50, and Lauren, you can correct me if on that, because it's always changing, obviously, but roughly 50-50. In a no deal Brexit, it's probably hardest on our commercial clients, but the government is going to have to spend a lot of money to compensate
support
and deal
the
with
economy.
The change. Yeah. And then if it's a more managed Brexit, probably less need for activity on the government side. But now, any investment, and I did hear this from our customers and even our customers' customers, everybody's preparing for the certainty, but until it happens, they're not going to pull that investment lever. So I think on the commercial side, if you have a managed Brexit, it'll be a little bit more on the commercial side. So having that portfolio to deal with any of the situations, like I said, we're holding our own in the current situation, getting closer to both government and industry customers. And then depending on which one happens, one side will probably grow a little bit faster. And the reason I can say this, all of this, is because we have a proximity model. So I'm talking about the indirect impacts to our customers of Brexit. The direct impact on CGI really doesn't exist. We're in the services business, and we're a proximity model, so we're not moving people back and forth and cross borders. We did have some cross-border work getting ahead of this, and I talked to some of our banking customers as well. They did the same thing. You saw this. They prepared for maybe the change ahead of time. We made all those changes about a year and a half ago. So where we had maybe some people in the EU doing work in the UK, or people in the UK doing work in the EU that would be exposed to this, we changed that a year and a half ago. So we're not exposed directly. That's why I'm talking about the indirect exposure and or opportunities that Brexit would have.
Do you think there's pent-up demand, actually? I think about it is you have these guys waiting, not doing the projects they need to do, and eventually, even if nothing happens, eventually they're going to have to move on and improve their...
I do think there will be pent-up demand, and I think it will be it'll just be a microcosm, maybe a little higher velocity than what we're seeing in the overall market. They're going to have to make some investments to position themselves in the new reality. At the same time, we know that there could be some impacts to that economy in the UK, and so they're going to need to do some things to make sure that they're efficient in their operations. Those are both opportunities for us to help our clients, and in the end, then, of course, it will strengthen CGI.
Question on Indian, Indian firms, they keep talking about going onshore, and have you seen a more difficult market for getting good employees in the U.S. because these guys are coming more and more on the U.S. side?
You know, I don't see it as much from our client or from the competition as directly as I do from some of our clients. Our clients are also, as IT is a good news story, as IT becomes more core to the to each of the various industries we work in, they need to figure out how do they make sure that they get some of the talent they need. So that's a short-term headwind. I would say it's also a longer-term tailwind because the more educated and the better IT staff that our clients have, the better buyers they become of our services, and quite frankly, the more they are open to the CGI value propositions. Because there is no way they can amass the IT talent that that a CGI has all around the world. That's not their core business. They need to have enough IT talent to be, to use
recognize
IT,
to recognize the
where
companies.
They need, and then they extend that ecosystem to a company like CGI. So, again, the model plays in our favor. I don't see as much of what you're talking about. And again, remember our model in the metro markets. That's where we want to amass talent, but we also have the onshore and nearshore. Opportunities. We never went all offshore. And so even if you build the onshore presence, what we're seeing is more and more clients. I just had this discussion with a client from the West Coast of the United States recently. They had two partners. Okay, this client had two partners. One was CGI for the on-site, and one was one of those competitors for the offshore. And they said, we want to talk about, with all the data privacy and the security concerns, this company operates in the data space. We're thinking maybe we have too much offshore. We don't want to put it all onshore. Tell us more about your model. And they started actually thinking about some of our Eastern European operations. And the more they talked about it and briefed their board, they came to using the Canadian operations. Now, that's still in discussions. But I'm just sharing with you some of the discussions that we're having. So even as if you're one of our competitors, as you mentioned, that are going to try to put everything proximate, you also have to build out that other dimension, which is the nearshore, because it's not one or the other. There's the in-between, especially with some of the changes that are going on.
Can you tell us a nice digital transformation example? You've come in, you implemented it, and the success it had on your client's business.
So
just so that we
understand, I think that's
a little bit more about what you're doing.
I think it's good, and yet
I'm putting you on the spot.
How much time do we have? No, it's fine.
30 seconds.
In 30 seconds, that's a little difficult. But I will leave you with something that I think is important, and I'll give you maybe some snapshots. There isn't a digital transformation story from start to finish that I can give you, not because CGI isn't involved in this. When we did our recent survey, and of course we're doing this again now of our in-person discussions, 1,400 clients last year, I looked at the numbers this morning because I was doing this talk and talking to many of you throughout the day. The number of our clients who said they are completed with their digital transformation and bringing value to their organization, do you want to guess what the number was? 4%. And I'm not sure I believe the 4%. And the reason I say that is because we have lots of stories, and what we see our clients doing now is what we call digital interventions. You can't change your whole. It's not a transformation. It is, in the end, it will be a transformation.
We're still at really.
But you've got to do that. We're in the early days. What examples I have? We have all kinds of examples of where we're providing those kinds of digital interventions, either on the front end customer side. So I mentioned this before, but with a lot of our banks, we're using gamification to attract new customers to their wealth platforms, and then of course the robo-advising to help lower the cost and provide better services. We're doing that same type of thing from a customer-centric opportunity with telcos. So telcos, think of the way Amazon says, if you like this, then maybe you'd like that. So the telcos, and what we're developing for them is using the data and how they're using the system, I think you might be interested in this app. What does that do now? That's a service to the customer, but then what it does is drive higher utilization of the network. We're seeing other customers who are doing this for several transportation companies and utility companies, how to better leverage their network. So for one in particular, in Germany, what they wanted to do is they're managing rail, right? And they said, okay, we have better data. If we digitize, we can use better data to decide when to allocate to the cargo, when to allocate to the passenger, to maximize both the utilization of the tracks, which they were doing, but now to maximize not just the utilization of the tracks, but the monitoring, right? So what telcos did to us years ago when they said, okay, we're going to charge you more during peak hours, right? So it's that type of thing, and of course that's what we're doing for the utilities as well. Those are the real world examples of digitization. And then proactively, using again the data and the sensors that we're using, we've done this for several of the oil and gas companies, where we can predict where there's going to be a failure before there's a failure, use some of the remote access then to maybe fix it remotely and or deploy somebody there before you have any of the downside of lack of utilization. So getting more serious about value creation, but still
very
the
early
of the value creation.
That's potential upside. Yep. Okay. Perfect. So double-digit EPS growth this year?
If you say so.
And margin improvement and continued organic
higher
growth.
Margins. Yeah, good.
All right.
Good environment.
Thank you very much,
Thank you.
Everyone.
Okay.